Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Star Wars Splash Page, Comics in Review.
This is episode number 194, the prequel to Force Fest 2020 episode. Bring it! Hi, Jeff.
Geek me all knowing box set, stay open May 4th. I'm hoping Luke gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
Hi, Matt. It's also the prequel to episode 195, isn't it?
Well, if you want to get technical, yeah. I mean, you can't argue with the numbers.
This is Star Wars. Don't we always get technical? And I'm not sure why I called it the Star Wars splash page this time, because you know, people have the corona and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't know why.
Well,
why I went with the.
If George Lucas could call it the Star Wars to begin with, then we could call it the Star Wars splash page.
That's
comic
a good point.
In review.
That's a very good point.
So yeah, why not? I say we do it.
All right. So before I forget, I want to throw this out there, and we'll come up again at the end, but this is coming out on Wednesday. Don't forget, this Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Mountain, and 3 p.m. Pacific, we our Force Fest panel about canon and continuity in Star Wars comics will be available and live for your listening pleasure.
Yes,
and
a whole hour.
Since we'll all be on video as well.
Exactly, a whole hour. We are going to be joined by Chris and Dan from Broaxium, and we are going to be examining how those Star Wars comics since 2015 build upon, maintain, and project canon and continuity. It's going to be a big blast, but first off, I do want to give a big shout-out to Nicole. She helped us this past weekend do a dry run. She's a total rock star. As well as an aspiring voice talent actor, so here's hoping she becomes famous very soon.
Yes, because fame and riches are what you can expect from voice acting.
Well, you know, make a comfortable living with it.
You know, you can. You absolutely can. You absolutely can.
All right. Speaking of news. You know, one day I should actually hook up my old Associated Press wire terminal. And have it run. And
yes, you should.
So, IDW is going to be publishing a one-shot The Mandalorian title, probably in December or January. A mock-up cover went out with the November solicits this past week that featured a picture of the child, a.k.a. Baby Yoda. Initially, it was thought that the cover art was by Peach Momoko, who is a Japanese artist, and her variants are among the most sought after by collectors. I mean, you know, she does limited runs sometimes, you know, for specific comic book stores. And it's like a Hasbro, you know, Star Wars playset being on, you know, available on the Hasbro website for 17.2 nanoseconds.
Right.
That's how fast they sell. But she did reach out to us to say that while she is doing the cover art, the issue that the cover that we had on the Twitter feed on the Facebook page was not her art.
Whoops.
Well, that's okay. It happens. It looked a lot like her art, but still really looking forward to seeing her cover. You know, like we said, $7.99 is going to be a one shot. And of course, you know, this is no surprise, you know, because they had said in earlier this summer that, you know, that Lucasfilm is planning some, you know, the Mandalorian related publishing forays, including comic books from Marvel and IDW. Nothing yet as of now. And of course, we just had the November solicits, and there was nothing in the November solicits from Marvel about that. Also, again, there was nothing in the November solicits referring specifically to the 5-issue The Rise of Skywalker adaptation. You know, word on the street, supposedly, is that it's been pulled. I'm of the opinion that it has not been pulled, but that it will see the light of day sooner, hopefully, than later. But at this point, you know, I don't know if it's going to be still the 5-issue monthly miniseries, or, you know, who knows? They could decide just to release it as a trade. But that's just conjecture on my part. One of the things we gleaned from the November solicits from Marvel was that Marika Cresta will end her run illustrating Dr. Aphra with issue number 5. She is being replaced, and that's mighty big shoes to step into, by Ray Anthony Height. Ray Anthony Height is a great artist. He did a lot of a work on one of my favorite Marvel books, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. So he's got a really good technical style with a lot of whimsy. And he's already been showing off some of the illustrations of Aphra on his Twitter feed. We'll put a link to his Twitter feed in the show notes. Definitely check it out. Very excited about this. Going to be sad to see Marika go, obviously. But knowing that Ray Anthony is stepping in, that makes me feel a whole lot better. It softens the blow in a big way. As well as with Dr. Aphra, another nice reveal. We had we had said something maybe a week or two ago on the Twitter feed about a Dr. Aphra omnibus was in the works. Well, guess what? It is in the works. It will be released February 24th and include all 40 issues of Dr. Aphra Volume 1.
Wow.
The three annuals. Darth Vader Volume 1 issues 3 and 4, 8 and 21, as well as parts of issue number 25. Star Wars Volume 2, 13, 19, 31, and 32. The Screaming Citadel one-shot, and the Aphra story from the Empire Ascendant one-shot that came out in, December that came out. The price is $125, but you are getting 1,240 pages of Dr. Aphra. Now, that said, we are big proponents here at the Star Wars Splash Page of always trying to buy your comics and trades from comic book stores. However, $125 is a bit pricey for a lot of people. So to that end, bookmark a website called In Stock Trades, because they sell Marvel, DC, and other publishers omnibus hardcover graphic novels and trades, often at a very significant discount. Sometimes, like, you know, $125 omnibus will go for $70 to $75. So, again, we'll have a link in the show notes. And if you can afford it and you want to do it through your local comic shop, we salute you. But if you need a little price break, this is definitely worth checking out. I know my comic shop, you know, I did have the conversation with them once. They said, how come you don't ever buy any omnibuses from us? And I said, well, dude, come on. It's $125. I can get it for this price here. And you go, well, that's true. Can't argue with that. So,
aren't you getting enough of my money already?
Yeah, seriously. So. And last but not least, great artist on Instagram under the name Sway_art. He is doing some Star Wars covers, he says, but of course he has an NDA, so he can't show off what he's working on. So very excited about that. The Star Wars stuff that he has put on his Instagram feed is very compelling and so much fun to look at. So definitely do check that out. That's it for news now. We have two books this week, which is just an embarrassment of riches. And our first and foremost is, of course, Star Wars Adventures, The Clone Wars, Battle Tales number 4. And following that, we will be talking Dr. Aphra number 3. So what do you say, Jeff? Shall we get started?
I think we shall.
Okay, let's do this. You ready?
Now, this is number 4 out of 5. Is that correct?
Correct. This is a 5-issue miniseries. Now, of course, if you recall, this was initially supposed to be, a weekly miniseries coming out throughout the month of April. But the coronavirus pandemic put the kibosh on that in a big way. So here we are. But, you know, I don't mind. It's been worth it. Each issue has been solid and stands on its own. And it's got a nice sort of overarching link. And it gives us a great focus on the clones. Now, granted, you know, we had an entire series about the Clone Wars, and we got to really know and love a lot of these clones. But this miniseries, and particularly this issue, I think takes us a little deeper into what makes the clones tick, both good and bad. So here we'll start in with number 4. Great cover by Derek Charm, as always.
Yeah, it almost makes him look almost sinister.
It does.
You've got one clone with his arms behind his back, standing almost at ease. But he also could be in handcuffs and shackles. And then you've got the clones behind him, you know, shaded in red, which sort of reminds me of the Emperor's Royal Guard. So, it's vaguely sinister, which I like.
Vaguely sinister, but, you know, again, and then, you know, with that wonderful backstop of, you know, a clone trooper helmet and profile. So it's very visually appealing. Of course, the variant cover, you know, is also by Derek Charm, and it's a black and white version. So, and then there was a specialty version, speaking of Peach Momoko, showing Yoda dueling with Darth Maul. So I think that was exclusive to one specific comic book shop, and I do not remember its name for the life of me.
Interesting take on Yoda as well.
Oh, well, yeah, but it's a great take on Yoda.
It is. You know, it's just not something you've ever seen before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so written by Michael Moretzi. The intro and outro art, of course, is by Derek Charm. The interior art for the flashback story is by David, apologies in advance if we mutilate your name. I apologize. You know, I did actually send a tweet his way going, hey, send us a DM. We have a question that only you can answer. But unfortunately, I did not hear back from him by the time we started recording. But David Tinto, or perhaps it's Davida Tinto. Colors are by Luis Antonio Delgado. He handled Derek Charm's colors. And then Thomas Deere did the colors for David's interior work. Letterer and designer is Jake M. Wood. Assistant editor is Riley Farmer. And editors on this book are Denton J. Tipton and Elizabeth Bry. For Lucasfilm, it's Robert Simpson, senior editor, Michael Siglane, creative director, Phil Shostak, Lucasfilm Art Department, and from the story group, Pablo Hidalgo, Matt Martin, and Emily Shkukani. And so this is chapter 4, and we, you know, set up with our intro, and the Republic forces are under siege. They are trying to maintain the planet Hisine's freedom, but the Separatists, unsurprisingly, refuse to yield. Led by Captain Rex and Commanders Cody and Wolf, the clones continue to battle back growing enemy numbers, wondering if the Jedi will ever return. And then we open up, and, you know, I got to say, I love when Derek Charm draws clone trooper battles.
Yes, this is a lot of fun. And, and it reminds me a lot of, especially there's that bottom panel on the first page, looks like something straight out of the cartoon.
It does, doesn't it?
The framing and everything, and the way it's, and it's very kinetic. You can actually feel the blaster bolts zooming past them.
You really can. And the lettering, I think, is just superb, you know, because, you know, we have the narration, which is actually, you know, one of the clone troopers talking, you know, tighten formation and hold your ground. And it's done with white text on a blue background. But then, you know, the effects of the bolts, of the laser bolts, you know, going back and forth between the clone troopers and the droid separatists. Choom, choom, ta 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 ta. And, you know, that's always, you know, we have one of the clone troopers. We must hold this position until backup arrives. I say keep them coming. The more clankers, the more targets. Are you crazy? The clankers are advancing. We can't keep this position. You know, then we cut to the next page. Well, we have to fall back. Fall back. And then all of a sudden we have some real, wow, this
guy.
Yeah,
he got his hands around his neck saying, did you just suggest we retreat, Twitch? That we abandon our post and our mission? Very arch, the way it's written. It's very, very, very dramatic.
It's like, come on, heater, overreact much?
You know, right. And then he says, you know, the guy says, easy, heater, said the temper of yours for the enemy. And he keeps going. He says, you want to run that city? He goes, well, they're surrounding us. I thought, and he says, let me tell you what it's like to run, what it's like to betray your brothers. And that image of heater is really remarkably well done.
Because it just, you know, the way Derek and Luis have sort of shaded it, because there's these, you know, these black, I don't want to say splotches, because they're not splotches, but it's artfully painted. You can tell that this is not a good memory. And then that's where we cut into our flashback. And this is where, you know, David Tinto's work comes in. And I got to say, I want to see more of his work. I really like the way this is done, because this is very cartoon style, but not cloyingly so. And there's a lot of great detail and a lot of just superb coloring here by Thomas Deere as well. And then that's where we get our backtrack. It's just a lousy bunch of deserters. And then we have basically, you know, almost like a repeat, you know, because we have the clones at rest at, you know, at their base. You know, they're not in their kit. You know, I'm sorry. What did you just say to me? I said, Heater, that you and all your friends are lucky they let you dine with the rest of us. You're cowards, deserters, a disgrace to the clone army. Yeah, that's what I thought you said.
Now, let me ask you a question, Matt. Do we know what they deserted from? Is that a reference to a Clone Wars episode that I'm forgetting?
It may be, but unfortunately, if it is, I do not know.
Okay, yeah, I was not sure as well, so I'm glad I'm not the only one. And ultimately, it doesn't matter, but...
This would be great if this is where we should have had Hope Mullinax come and join us. So,
right. Yeah.
So, because she would be able to tell us just like that. But this bottom panel is great because, you know, you have these clones who are, you know, being treated as deserters, you know, and you got Heater ready to go to fisticuffs, and, you know, you got one guy, you know, looks like he's eating a chocolate bar and drinking a cup of coffee.
Yeah, he's got a Hershey bar and some Joe there. So,
and then boom, next page. Nice left hook.
So. Yeah, and the way this fight is done is it's really great because you get several panels of them just, you know, tearing into one another.
Oh, definitely so. And, you know, and it evokes to me some classic sci-fi tropes. You know, you got one side on the right, you know, you've got the so-called deserters, you know, arms up going, yeah, yeah. And on the left side, you got the clone troopers going, yeah, yeah. And in the foreground, you know, you got Heater just, you know, swinging and trading blows, you know, with everybody. So it's just amazing here. You know, call me a deserter all you want, Slim, but you will not call me a coward. I never asked for this war. I never asked for, oof, you abandoned your brothers. I fought for myself. If you had a mind of your own, maybe you'd also, all right, break it up. Heater, you're coming with me now. And of course, the boss is there.
Right. And it's, I love the next panel. He's sitting behind a desk with his helmet on his desk there. It's great. And he's got his hands clasped.
And this is Commander Wolf, who, oddly enough, I saw his action figure in Target last weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's cool. So, but, you know, I don't buy action figures very, very often anymore. But I was like, oh, that's neat. So, but and this gives us a side, or, you know, maybe another side of the clone army that we don't get to see too often, which is kind of, you know, basically the administrative side, you know, because, you know, leadership is not just leading your troops into the field of fire, but it's also, you know, doing paperwork, you know, making sure that people are doing what they're supposed to be doing and offering leadership advice and wisdom, you know, and I like this whole page here. It does a great job of really, I think, extrapolating the dilemma of a clone trooper. You know, because people, I think sometimes people forget, you know, they were grown for a specific purpose and they are all the same, yet each clone has a distinctive personality. And it's very rare that we see clones that are so artfully aware of the notion of free will. And that's what Heater here represents. And of course, you know, we have Wolf going, look, training scenarios say a lot about us clones, how we perform, how we work as a unit, and maybe most importantly, how we stand up to the pressures of war. People are thinking you and others like you aren't cut out for real battle. And then, you know, Heater lays it on the line here in a very heartfelt way, but not like an over-the-top, oh, woe is me. I don't know what came over me, Commander Wolf. I know we were made for this, but part of me can't stop wondering what I would do if I ever had a choice. And then Wolf gasped, well, what would you do? I wish I could say, sir, I haven't been able to decide if deserting was a smart decision or a terrible mistake. And
at least he's honest. Yeah, that's huge.
He is. And David and Tom, I think, you know, they really capture the anguish that Heater is feeling here. You know, absolutely. Because he does not know. He fundamentally has not decided either way. And so, of course, Wolf responds, well, you might just appreciate the offer I have for you then. It's a mission. We're offering you and the others like you an opportunity for redemption. Do this, and your name is cleared. You can either find a place with your brothers in the clone army, or you can stay here. What do you say?
And then great response. And I love his body language. You know, his arms are outstretched. His hands are balled into fists. I say, we have a mission to prep for. And then boom, that's, you know, we find them. They're on the shuttle and they are about to deploy.
And the dropship, yeah, the gunship. Yeah. Our objective is simple. And basically they have to destroy a separatist weapons depot because it has a direct supply line to a planet the Republic is trying to liberate. So they need to cut off the supply of weapons. And he's saying, you know, we might just give our brothers a chance if we can do this. And one of the guys says, yeah, sure. Our brothers. And I love it because he's really, you know, showing some leadership. Says, is there a problem, racetrack? And he says, look, Heater, you can live this fantasy all you want, but I know what this is, a one-way mission. Commander is hoping for a miracle, but it's a win for them no matter what because their deserter problem is handled. And somebody else says, you're wrong. We can redeem ourselves. I left my squad when they needed me. I was scared. I was wrong. I won't be wrong again. Right, Sink? And Sink is next to him, and this is Charlie talking to Sink. He says, I'm with Charlie. This is who we are, and now's our chance to – and he doesn't get to finish the thought because they get fired upon.
Exactly. Kaboom. Hard. And they're going down. And you know, and again, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, because, you know, we see the activity inside the ship itself. And it's one of those rare occasions where we see the shuttle gunship with its sides closed as opposed to open.
Right.
So, and you don't see that very often, but, you know, it's kind of cool. And so you see the tumult that's going on inside. You boys are saying, we got hit by a surface-to-air missile. Brace yourselves. We're going down. And they go down hard, you know, and the pilot is killed, you know, because, you know, we see them coming out of the, you know, of the chassis of the ship. We're clear. Move out. Go, go. What about our pilot? He's gone. Now, come on this way. We may need cover. We're lucky this sector is abandoned, but vulture droids are going to be swarming soon. Yeah, vulture droids are always swarming.
Always. That's what they do. That's why they're called vulture droids.
Exactly.
And then he says, well, they know we're here now, so that complicates things. And so they're talking about their situation, and he says, one of them says, your word, your life, we have to give everything, don't we? And he says, well, this is the only life we know, the only family we have. I'll fight for you, Racetrack, for Heater, Charlie, for all of us. But don't tell me you're buying Sink's nonsense, Heater. And he says, maybe I am, because I'll tell you what, the only way we survive is together. We work as one and do what we were made to do. Might just be able to pull this thing off. And this is the first time in all of these issues that I felt like the writing felt like an all ages book. That is the only one that has, the only speech so far to me that has really felt like a moral lesson, you know, in bright letters, you know, pulsing.
Yeah, it is, but it's also, I think, an effective lesson, no matter how old you are.
Right, I don't mind it at all, but it's interesting that's we've gotten this far in, and that's the first time that I've really felt like we were being taught something.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think it's credit to all involved.
Yeah. So we're on the next page, and you know we see you know where the separatists have got their base, and we cut in, and we've got an ST series super tactical droid, you know. You know, just like they just sent one gunship to execute an assault on this weapons depot. By my calculations, the probability of a single clone unit launching a successful campaign against our position are only 2.1%. Right, that's what I was about to say, says a battle droid. But with odds so low, our adversaries must have a different tactic in mind. Send an alert to all units. Our opponents are about to make their move. And it's a great illustration here at the bottom. Of the, you know, from, we're seeing the ST droid from behind, and I think it's intriguing that he's got his arms clasped behind his back.
Yeah, just like the clone from the cover.
Yeah. So then we cut in, and you know, and we turn the page, and the clones are making their assault, but it's not technically an assault per se. It just, you know, and you get the clone going, I can't believe I'm doing this. Hey, you droids. Oh, us? Yeah, us? Yeah, you. I'm from the Republic gunship that crashed. I'm the only survivor, and I'm here to negotiate the terms of my surrender. We don't negotiate surrender. We don't know how. Well, here, take these. They're proof that my allies are dead, and there's also a little present inside. Present? I love Hey, what kind of present is this? And you see the panel of the battle droid, you know, holding the bucket, and there's, I guess, a thermal detonator inside. You know,
And there's an earth-shattering kaboom.
Look at that, though. Look at that lettering, that boom. and you just massive explosion. This is great coloring, great action, great energy. And then on the inset mid panel, you know, we've got Heater going exactly as planned. They're all heading for the explosion. Come on, this is our chance. Racetrack distracted the clankers. Now we've got to meet up with him. Let's get to that weapons depot. And nice action here, you know, seeing them scaling the wall and, you know, and jumping down, ready to go. And then, boom, we're inside the weapons depot. And I was kind of getting Star Wars A New Hope vibes here from the interior of the Death Star, you know. And I guess we know now how the Empire, you know, was able to adopt these non-OSHA-oriented construction plans. You know, you've got these wide avenues crisscrossing, you know, I guess these are the power tubes, but there's no railings of any kind.
Reminds me of there's a Robot Chicken sketch. I think it's actually a Family Guy where it's on the Death Star and there are the two gunners that are standing there and there's no railing. Yeah. And one of the guys says, I just want a railing. I don't want dental. I don't want vacation, just a railing. You know what they said? What? They said they were afraid we'd be leaning too much. That's exactly why there are no railings here. They're afraid people would lean too much. And as we all know, if you've got time to lean, you've got time to die, get to fall to your an ignominious death.
Exactly. But please clean before you do so.
Yes.
And we get some good dialogue here amongst the clone troopers, you know, because, you know, they're running through the mission, but, you know, they're still not sold, you know. All right, that's it for us as well. We've got more than enough firepower planted in this room to bring this entire facility crumbling to the ground. Let's not be around when that happens. But wait, what about Racetrack? He was supposed to meet us here. We can't leave without him. Some people are just deserters, Sync. It's who they are. And Sync is like, I don't believe that. No, you don't want to believe that. Face it, Racetrack is the smartest one of your unit if he did indeed desert. And then they immediately clap to bring the guns up. And the way this bottom panel is illustrated, you know, because we have Heater holding the big gun.
Right.
And then behind him, you know, are Sync and Charlie. You know, you've got to be kidding me. How? And there's our super tactical droid. The probability of the Republic launching a frontal assault on this facility with a single gunship was too low to even consider a possibility. Therefore, I anticipated you attempting to achieve your goal with a less conventional tactic. And now you will surrender or die. And then, of course, you know, Heater, or I can press this detonator and we all go boom. To which the ST droid says, the probability of you sacrificing both yourself and your squad mates is kaboom.
I love that the head just flies off the battle droid.
It does. I mean, it's just, there's something about the hue of these colors. It's almost like lavender and plum with little bits of purple. And it contrasts nicely, you know, with the beige of the B1B battle droids and, you know, the ochre of the strategy of the super tactical droid.
And the way that the tactical droid is looking at the battle droid in that shot, it's like a Pro-T robot from
he does from
Mystery Science Theater. Just the way he's drawn there. I love it.
You know, and just those three little vertical lines above the ST droid's head, like, wait, what? I did not account for that probability, which, you know, and there's Racetrack. Sorry I'm late, boys. Hope you didn't miss me too much. I can honestly say I didn't miss you until right now.
Great line.
Yeah, Michael Moretti, he just knows how to write clone dialogue here. I mean, he's in a groove in writing these clones. So, and of course, the ST droid. Yeah, this is impossible. We cannot lose. I did not calculate for a fourth clone. Just Heater gun barrel to the droid's head. Yeah, well, surprise. Us clones stick together. And then that little inset panel, shoom.
Yeah, we don't see it. We don't need to see it. But we see the smoke and coming out of the hole in the top of his head.
You know, just come on, move. You know, and that's a great angle here because, you know, we have the ST droid on the ground, you know, little wisp of smoke and, you know, flame coming out from the entrance wound and the exit wound and just, you know, laying there dead for all intents and purposes. And, you know, the clones start booking out of the facility and we get another ba-boom.
An even more earth-shattering kaboom, yeah.
And just, I mean, And just the way this is drawn, you know, because you have the trees in the foreground and you have essentially what is, what, you know, I would think is probably like the equivalent of a nuclear blast on this planet. And then, you know, we got little things in there by the trees, you know, we got, you know, look like little fungal cones and some kind of lizard.
Lizard watching it. Yeah. I'm going, well.
And then this bottom panel, of the four clones. I really like this a lot. It's just nicely rendered. You know, they're smug and satisfied because they accomplished their goal. And so Heater goes, well, so racetrack, tell us, why did you come back? Why the change of heart? Change of heart. I came back because I remembered you were my ride off this rock. There he is. Come on, racetrack. That's not it. And you know it. We're clones. One and the same. We're family. Brothers. And then just, you know, this lower left panel. You know, Sync, you keep that optimism up and you just might rub off on me one of these days. And as they say that, they look up and, you know, their rescue shuttle is coming in for a landing. And, you know, of course, out comes Wolf. Well, judging by the mountain of smoke we saw on our way in, it seems like your boys had some fun. And then we have, you know, Heater explaining, well, the weapons depot is gone. Mission's accomplished. And Wolf, I thought this was interesting, you know, because he says, good work, and the Republic is true to its word. You four are free. We will take you wherever you'd like to go. So essentially, you know, it seems to me these stakes were a little higher than we were led to believe.
Right. Yeah, they were going to give them their freedom.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they could be mustered out honorably, you know, not dishonorably. And then, you know, Heater looks back at the other three, you know, Sith or Sync, Charlie, and racetrack. And he says, there's only one place we want to go, home. And it's a nice shot, you know, from the rear of the shuttle, or I think it's the rear. No, I don't know. I can't tell. I can't tell because of the perspective. But, you know, the way it's silhouetted in the sun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we cut back and we're back at the present. You are a clone, Twitch. This is your family. And we fight for family until the end. You know, one of the clones gets hit and he says, get him to cover. You got that? Sir, yes, sir. Good. Now let's get us some. Heater, no. Twitch, get out of here. Until the end, brother. They've got us. Got us surrounded. You want him, you clankers? Well, you'll have to go through. What the? And then boom, boom, boom. And the battle droids go down. And then it's the clones from the beginning of the book. Good. At least that's what I think it is. Good to see you again, Heater. And then all of a sudden, it goes from bad to worse. Because, and this is a bit jarring, because I thought there could have been a little more segue here. See what I mean?
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. It is, but I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah, I guess.
They kind of go right back in.
Yeah, I guess they're coming in to, you know, to augment and to help support. But then they get pinned down because, you know, one of the droids throws a thermal detonator and we see another big boom. A lot of booms in this book. And then that's where we, you know, we've got, you know, the clone Commander Skywalker. Come in. Do you copy, sir? We need backup. Does anyone read me? Anyone? And we get a to be continued. Of course, this will be to be concluded. And that's right. Where we get the cover for next month's issue, which features General Grievous and a whole lot of battle droids. So yeah, great book. Really enjoyed this one.
I did too. I'm interested to see how this is going to work out. I assume it's all going to work out for the best, but you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, that's the thing though, is they're clones, you know, so it may not, but I mean, you know, it is an all ages book. So you don't necessarily want to be killing off your main characters in an all ages book, but you know, it does make sense. You know, we have seen them get injured, but so far we really haven't seen any of the core cast get killed,
right? At least not in this series. Yeah.
So I don't know, we'll find out. Next issue, of course, you know, it was written by Michael Moretzi, and the wraparound art is by Derek Charm, and the interior art will be by Philip Murphy. So looking forward to it in a big way.
Me too. Yeah, should be good.
All right, let's get to the main course, so to speak.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yes, the main course after the very satisfying appetizer of Battle Tales, but the main course is obviously going to be Dr. Aphra number 3, Fortune and Fate Turnabout. And this cover is, we talked about it last time, but this cover is terrific. This would be an album cover if this was a band. It would be a great album cover.
Wouldn't it, though? I mean, my goodness, because it gives us all of our main characters that are in the main storyline here, and we see them in differing poses, yet, you know, one functional static array. And, you know, just the look of shock and awe, and just, I mean, and the way Aphra, you know, anchors it in the center there. You know, in color, she's got, you know, one eye closed, and then, you know, in black and white, sort of grayscale, got an eye open. You know, this is by Valentina Reminar, and I really enjoy her covers a lot. There was also a variant cover by Mahmoud Asrar and Matt Wilson, which is pretty awesome. If you can find it, I think it's probably going for anywhere from 24 to 40 bucks, because, you know, it's not as widely available. But it's a pretty solid cover. It shows Aphra falling and reaching out for what we later learned to be one of the rings. Anyway, Star Wars, Dr. Aphra, Fortune and Fate, Part 3, Turnabout. Written by Alyssa Wong. Art by Marika Cresta. The color artist is Rochelle Rosenberg. The letters are by Virtual Calligraphy's Joe Caramagna. Graphic designer is Carlos Lau. The assistant editor is Tom Groneman. The editor is Mark Venezia. For Lucasfilm, again, senior editor Robert Simpson. Creative director Michael Siglaine. The story group, Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shkukani. And from the Lucasfilm art department, Phil Shostak. And again, I like how this is designed out. It looks archaeological, almost as if it was like, you know, like Sumerian cuneiform. You know, where we have our list of characters, you know, our list of characters, and then again, each one has one of the rings above them. Not, you know, they don't each get their own unique ring, but I think it's kind of cool. So, I mean, you know, it shows us that we have Dr. Aphra, Black Chrysanthemum, Deda Yao, Professor Eustacia Aka, Just Lucky, TA-418, and of course, the antagonist who's made all of this possible, Ronan Tage. And we open in and we literally are picking up where we left off in issue 2. You know, we've had the cave in, people have fallen through the floor, and then we open up with this interior inset panel upper left, and I like how it's sort of blurred.
Yeah, it's great. And especially when you find out that that's not who she's actually looking at.
No, yeah, because you know, we see the droid and we see, you know, what looks like Aphra. You know, Eustacia, wake up. What? Shelly, and then boom, the next one we had this little, you know, sort of, you know, internal, you know, box. Oof, she's out of it. Sorry, Prof, it's just us. And of course, it's Black Chrysanthemum and Just Lucky. And then we pull out this overarching, you know, roof, like we're looking from the ceiling, and you see the debris from
it's
the
so cinematic. It's perfect. I love it.
It is. It's so deftly done. You just, ugh, Lucky, where are we? And of course, you know, this is Eustacia. Not sure. The floor collapsed and we fell a long way down. On the upside, everyone seems to be in one piece, unlike these folks. What about the others? Deda and Aphra. Roar. You know, and this panel I thought was not needed, but I think it really emphasized that, you know, because, you know, Black Chrysanthemum's rep is just this, you know, violence, walking violent rug. And here he is going, ouch, thank you for the back to spray, Black Chrysanthemum.
Yeah, he's taking care of his crew. Yeah.
You know, I love that. It's a little thing. It has no real bearing on the rest of the issue. But it was just a nice touch.
Whole character moment, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, we see Just Lucky. He's looking up. Do you hear that? There are voices coming from up there. And they fell a long way.
I'm amazed that they're alive and not don't have broken bones. It yeah. really is a little... It strains credulity a little bit.
Well, it does. But, it's, you know, it's also... It's a comic book, you know, and it's fake. And it's fake and it's in space. So, and we have that very small, you know, speech balloon. And she opened the door. And you turn the page and that's where the rest of everybody is on that floor. And of course, we have Ronan Taga's crew, if you will, up there, you know, with Deda Yao and Dr. Aphra. And they are surrounded by everybody. And, you know, we have some, you know, this person on the crew going, I said, you best just open the door to the workshop. We want those rings. Deda Yao.
Deda is saying, you know, and I said, it's not that simple. We've been trying to figure out how to unlock it for some time. But as you can see, we just lost our foremost expert in the field. And we have Aphra looking over the side going, Eustacia, I'm so sorry. And again, this is always Aphra expressing remorse instead of doing something that would have headed her remorse off at the pass.
Exactly. As always, you know, just, it's just, again, it's that moral ambiguity. You know, she knows she's done wrong. And she's just, you know, this. At this point, I don't even want to say it's a character flaw. Because, you know, it's who she is. You know, she just simply cannot comprehend, you know, acting instead of reacting.
She can't see past the moment she's in.
No, she can't. She can't. I'm not faulting her. I mean, you know, she's...
I am.
Well, but, you know, that's just who
she is. I'm the judgier of the two of us, though, so that's why.
You are Mr. Judgmental.
It's true.
And then again, this dialogue, I really like the way Alyssa Wong has written this dialogue because, you know, we have one of Taga's, you know, enforcers here. You're awfully mouthy considering your position. And this, I thought this line was perfect. I'm a grad student on a deadline. I've already suffered beyond what you can imagine. And then, oh, I can imagine, you know, crack. Then of course,
I don't know, I can imagine quite a bit.
And then of course we get the Mon Cala, you know, Keyhart, stand down, we need them intact. And that's where Aphra finally joins the fray. Good call.
You know? Because after all, Professor Aka has no more than a smear down at that tunnel shaft, so you're kind of running out of options. Really wish we hadn't lost the Wookiee too, but well, we had a good run. And she puts her hand over the barrel of his gun and says, call your boss. And from there, we cut to Ronan Taga's private penthouse on Canto Bight, everyone's favorite pleasure planet.
That Canto Bight is going to be with us forever now. And because it is such an ostentatious place that, of course, the filthy rich, the obscenely wealthy, you know, and the just morally bankrupt.
And he's entertaining. Yes. And I love the way this is written. This, my dear Ronan, it's been too long. That I can hear in Thurston Howell the Third's voice as if he was speaking it in my ear.
Well, think about it. It's the Taga family. So
yeah, that's exactly what it would sound like. I just somehow the way it's written, the cadence and everything is just perfect.
Everybody's going to be sucking up to the Taga, to the Taga family. So,
and so he gets interrupted. Somebody comes to tell him, we get Aphra's voiceover from Aphra telling them what she wants him to be told. He says, tell him that in light of my crew's deeply unfortunate demise, I've decided to accept his offer. He wants the Rings of Veil, he'll have them. And I love this at the very bottom of the page, we get his profile and her profile back to back. And he's saying, it seems one of my associates has had a sudden change of heart. And Aphra is saying the division of our spoils just went from 5 shares to 2. And no one pays like the Tagas. And down in the pit, Lucky saying, damn, that's cold, even for Aphra. And I'm wondering if she really thinks they're dead. I'm assuming she does.
I think, yeah, because I don't think she can see them. They can't be seen, I don't think. And I'm surprised, you know, even with their small flashlights, I don't think the light is brilliant enough to shine up there for them to see. You would think that the droid would probably look down and maybe do a scan. But, you know, so far, droid hasn't.
Right.
But, you know, again, you know, that dialogue from Just Lucky, that just, that just, cool. really, it just really nails it. I mean, because, yeah, you know, it's contemporary dialogue. It's something that we would hear talking to our own friends or, you know, or reading on social media. But I think that just helps make this book even more relatable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't seem out of character, out of place in this universe as well, because, you know, the next panel, Eustacia saying, I can't believe I ever, and Lucky says, Black Kay's right. We all make mistakes. As he responds and he says, Black Kay's right. We all make mistakes, especially when they're pretty. And I'm thinking, wow, I relate to that on a molecular level.
Yeah, and somewhere, Magda Tolva just pumped her fist in the air.
Yes.
So Magda Tolva's like, yeah, I hear you.
And so course, Eustacia, you know, will not be deterred. She goes, if she thinks we're dead, she'll be extra surprised when we beat her to the rings. And she says, unlike the remains around us, these bones weren't just thrown down here. They're interred in the walls. That means the architect would have built an entrance and an exit, which they find.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, just Lucky. Eek. Well, if it's the only way out, I guess we don't have much of a choice. And I just want to take a moment here to really laud how Marika Cresta and Rochelle Rosenberg have illustrated this chamber, because I mean,
so creepy.
Oh my God, it's so creepy. It is the creepiest. It's probably next to the Screaming Citadel. It's probably the creepiest environment I've seen in the Star Wars comic.
Yes, agreed.
So we cut back, and so they're starting to go through, and you know, the dialogue here, there's the perfect amount, because essentially they're narrating what we, the reader, are seeing. And just like he's going through, I think these bones are fused with the walls. Anyone else feel like they're being watched? And of course, you know, Akka is just, you know, she's like, you know, interesting. I hadn't read anything in the texts about fusion. Perhaps to prevent the remains from being stolen? I'll have to make note of it. Look, I hate to bring it up, but there's no way Tag's forces should have caught up to us this fast.
And just what are you saying? I'm saying we got a spy. Someone's been feeding them info. How else could Tag have sent that message to your droids or tracked us here? And we're going to find out at the end of the episode, spoilers, end of the issue, who the spy is. But but he's trying to throw suspicion onto Aphra, which he does, because Eustacia says Aphra, of course, wouldn't be the first time.
And yeah, and she says that unbidden.
Right.
And you know,
that's true. She does have a reputation for it still.
And I'm wondering what Black Chrysanthemum is saying here. I think that roar is probably, you know, an agreeing nod. Saying, yeah, she's definitely wouldn't put it past her.
Seems legit. And of course, Eustacia she says that there are stairs up ahead. I'd rather climb than talk. She doesn't even want to entertain it. Doesn't want to waste the breath.
No, because she wants to find those rings. She is now focused, and God bless her. More power to her.
The back topside, Aphra and the rest of the crew are working, and she says, Aphra says, so your names are, wait, don't bother, I won't remember them anyway. Spread out and search the walls for the door key and watch out for traps like that one. And we see one has been triggered. And of course, this other woman says, who do you think you are giving us orders? And in the background, we have Venters introducing himself. And he says, I'm Venters. She goes, hi, I'm Detta. And I love the way she's drawn there, just going straight into schoolgirl flirty mode.
She's definitely flexing on him, you know, because she's doing the body language here for sure. Yeah. And then, of course, Aphra is all business. And I'm Dr. Aphra, but you knew that already. If you don't start paying attention, none of us are making it through the door. Ooh, muscles, nice. And then Keyhart's like, Tucker, are we really going to listen to her? Do you want the door open or not? Get started, Keyhart. And then, of course, you know.
And she kicks. One of them kicks a brick.
Yeah, and for a minute there, I thought it was Venters. I was like, oh, poor Venters. He was just getting started flirting. And, of course, it turned out not to be him. And Keir's like, he's dead. Be careful. If all of you die, we won't get the door open. And, again, Detta, man, look at this. I'm so glad you're here. Honestly, I'm just so worried about the curse. And Venters, what curse?
And she is so playing this up.
Oh my God. Oh my! This is a master class, you know, in how to influence people.
In male manipulation. Because you didn't know the Rings of Vale are cursed. The whole city is. I didn't believe it, but after those mutated skeletons came after us, those poor people must have suffered a horrible death. Plus, you see it too, right? The way the door is moving.
Gulp!
Thank the light. I thought I was going crazy. And the Mon Cala says, "You're not being paid to socialize, Venters." Sorry, and he says, what's this? And he presses a button, which immediately activates four arms with hands, large hands, that grab almost all of them up.
That was weird, but you know, at this point, I'm all for it because I love the weirdness of this book, and it would make perfect sense given how weird this city is.
Right. And of course, that's where Detta kicks Venters off the side. It's been real, Venters. She kicks him off the side.
Woo! Damn. You know, for sure. And then, I like how Aphra is like, ah, Kark. And then, of course, we cut to the, you know, we're back at the bottom. You hear that? Sounds like screaming. Is it like that high-pitched sound you heard earlier? No, but I hear that too. This is Lucky talking. I can just feel it in my bones now. It's unsettling. And then, Eustacia turns out it might be the effect of some architect's security device, an alarm at a frequency that not everyone can hear. And then as she's saying this, these hands start popping out. Not these enormous, like, robotic-style looking hands, but, like, gnarled, withered, you know.
Yeah.
Not groomed fingernail
hands. Corpse-like hands. And Lucky has to pull her away, and Chrysanthemum just starts zapping him with his bowcaster. And Lucky's like, what the hell? They're gone. It's like nothing happened. He's just like nothing happened. And he says, but it did. We all saw that, right?
And I think that's important because, yeah, because now they're kind of wondering, wait a minute, what's going on? You know, like...
It was a trick of the light. And Lucky's like, it wasn't, I swear. Prof, I'm not going nuts. And she's still just... amazed at the artistry of the craftsmanship and everything. The artisanship of these crypts is much more sophisticated than what we found below. To see this with my own eyes is life-changing.
Well, and think about it. She's an academic, so she, you know, this, you know, this is, you know, she is seeing stuff in person now, as opposed to, you know, the research hollows or texts.
Right. And Lucky's talking about the sound getting worse, and she says, well, that makes sense. I've been tracing our path, and if I'm right, we should be directly below the workshop. That's where it was the loudest last time, isn't it? He says, yeah, but this time, and they figured out the markings on that wall. I've seen them before. Follow me. They walk in. This could be it. And we cut back upstairs, and Aphra is...
Dodging the big hands.
Yeah,
here.
Dodging everything and doing her best. And then Montella says, Aphra, I shouldn't have trusted you.
And he said... No, but he says it while he's in the grip of a hand.
Yes, he's being dragged down. I shouldn't have trusted you. Like, why does everyone keep saying that?
And then finally, you know, the hand's pulling down. And, you know, Detta, in here, hurry. I'm hurrying. Got you. Ah. And then, whoa. And it's this Aphra in shock. And we get this is a great split page here because we see it from, you know, the perspective of both Aphra topside and Eustacia bottom side, the architect's workshop, their inner sanctum, where the rings were created, and then the architect's mausoleum, the ring's final resting place.
Yeah, start and finish, and it really is. It's really, I love the way that they've done this.
That is a great way to do it, because this could have easily been done as like, a split horizontal panel with just two panels. But that would have taken away from the effect. That would have diluted the effect. Going vertical as the way they did so here, that was some smooth editing. That was a good design choice.
Agreed. And Eustacia's in the grip of this thing. She goes, all my research, my hopes. Finally, I'll know if I was right all along. And she finds this ring in a stone clam. It looks like she has the ring of fortune. It's real. And Lucky says, mission accomplished. Now let's get out of here before my head splits in half. Black Kay says he saw a way out. So she says, I'm right behind you. And then up topside, Aphra and Detta are noticing that the case is empty. So there are no rings. And Detta says it's impossible. All the text pointed to the ring of immortality has to be here. And Aphra says, well, clearly it's not. Sometimes the texts are wrong, kid. She's like, don't call me that. She says, whoa, I didn't think you'd mind considering the whole sweet and innocent racket you have going. Love that this is where Aphra just sort of reveals everything. She says, what, you didn't think I'd see through it? Or you plan to ditch us and take the rings for yourself? She says, well, what makes you think that? It's what I would have done at your age.
And the look on her face, on Afra's face, and even the look on Detta Yao's when she says, well, what makes you think she's got her arms crossed, her head, you know, her head's kind of cocked a little.
And we get in the next page, we get another split. And, you know, this has been a theme of this book because we had the first one was when we had Aphra and Ronan on opposite sides of one another. Then we had the one you just talked about where one was in the mausoleum and one was in the workshop. And now we're seeing both of their histories side by side going down, and we're seeing how much their timeline sort of runs parallel to one another.
It's crazy.
Their experience. It's really well done. And Aphra just has her number. She calls it out exactly. And she says, you'll never, Aphra says, you'll run around in circles around them until they're forced to admit you're better than them. And if you ruin a couple of lives in the process, well, that's just the icing on the cake. And Detta says, well, that's an awful lot of projection, doctor. She says, don't get me wrong. I like you, Detta. You're hungry. That's what makes you good. But when I offered Eustacia full credit for discovering the rings, you didn't protest, not even a peep. That's how I knew you weren't planning on sharing credit.
That is a great nod, too. You know, that was spot on, I thought.
Yeah, and then she finishes up with, turns out I don't like sharing either, which we already knew. And so Eustacia, Chrysanthemum, and Lucky have found an exit. They run in, and they're in the workshop. And they tell Aphra and Detta, we found one of the rings. And Detta, you know, immediately comes to Professor. Okay, you're alive. I'm so glad to see you. Then pulls her gun. Now, what was that about a ring? Finally showing her true colors. And Eustacia says, Detta, I don't understand. She goes, I don't know. I think it's pretty simple. Only one ring? I guess it's better than none. Too bad the workshop was a dead end. Would you mind opening this for me, Professor? And she tries to hand her the stone clam. She goes, and if any of you move, I'll put a bolt right through her heart. So, you know, Lucky's having to hold Chrysanthemum back. And so Eustacia opens it, and there's nothing there.
Not a thing.
And Detta says, you lied to me. She goes, no, I don't know why it's not in there. She says, last chance to come clean, Professor. And Lucky speaks up and says, wait, looking for this? And he's palmed it, apparently, at some point. And I love Aphra's like, oh, that piece of... dot, dot, dot. And Eustacia says, you stole it from me? And Detta says, won't you be a gentleman and bring it to me, Lucky? And I love this look, you know, Lucky and Aphra looking at one another. And he says, sure thing, and then drops it. Whoops, clumsy me. And so that gives Aphra a chance. She shoots Detta in the back and goes to help Eustacia. And she tells Lucky, now hand me the ring. He says, I think I'll hold on to it for a bit longer. And then we have all of the crew that we thought had just been killed.
Are alive.
Including
Venters.
Including Venters. And one of them says, sorry it took us so long to get here, boss. And Lucky says, as you said yourself, Doc, no one pays like the tags.
And the look on his face is like, yep.
And, you know, the last issue I complained that it ended the exact same way the first issue ended. This is much the same, but at least it's a little bit different. There's a little bit of a twist on it.
Oh, it's a great twist because
it really is great. And I love it. And I, as I'm going back through and reading it again, that's, you know, I noticed that, you know, Lucky was setting the seed with Eustacia about a spy, and it turns out he's the spy. And these rings really are, they're like the rings of power from Lord of the Rings.
They are. They very much are.
They're corrupting everyone.
The whole city is like that, though. The whole city has that effect. That's what they were talking about in the previous issues. You know, that it's not a nice place. So that
brings us to the end of this issue, and the cover for the next issue, which we'll talk about next time, is equally stunning to this month. But yeah, this was a much better issue than the last one, and makes me very excited about where this story is going to go.
It's really hitting its stride, you know. And you know, we know that this is a 5-issue arc, so I'm really excited to see what happens in 4 and 5 because there's going to be a lot to unpack. I think because there is a lot of potential for mischief, and this story at this point could really go either way. You know, in terms of what happens to the characters. So I'm pretty stoked for this. It's going to be awesome.
And we might find out in the next issue that Ronan has somebody else, even one other person on the inside on his payroll.
Exactly.
A la Joker from The Dark Knight. Exactly. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed this issue a lot.
Yep.
So that's it for the reviews. What do we have for next week, Matt?
You know, I don't think we have anything.
So we got 2 this week and none for next week.
Yeah. Actually, it's kind of looking that way.
Well, we'll have to come up with something to discuss then.
I think we could probably manage that. That should be easily done.
And if nothing else, maybe if we can get our audio from the panel, maybe we can throw that up.
Oh, definitely so.
So
we are never lacking for anything to discuss when it comes to Star Wars comics.
Agreed. So, all right. Well, that will do it then for this edition of Star Wars Splash Page. Matt, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And once again, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Matt.
And may the Force be with you.
Always.
Always. The Star Wars Splash Page theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
Stop peeing!